Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. My name is Karen Edwards, and I'm reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. This program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This program is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, The Strength My Mother Left Me. This is in the Real People section. For Amy Ettinger, a hand-me-down set of Mahjong tiles helped confront grief. A few years before my mom died, she moved to an independent living facility where she joined a weekly Mahjong game that took precedence over her other social obligations. She collected quarters so she would have money to pay if she lost a hand, but she had been playing for close to 7 decades, and her coin purse stayed full. Mahjong is similar to gin rummy, but with tiles and elaborate rules that require cooperation and strategy. Mom played it her whole life, but she never taught me how because she worked when I was young and her spare time was limited. Later on, she did give me her old set in what looked like a battered clarinet case, warning me to treat it gently. "That might be valuable," she said. I stuck the relic in my attic until shortly after her death in 2018. That's when I finally took it out to more carefully study the tiles, butterscotch in color and encased in black, which glowed blue in the sunlight. They were smooth to the touch and cool and made a clicking noise when mixed together. They reminded me of a simpler analog life, filled with rotary phones and rabbit ear antenna, of afternoons running through cold sprinklers, sneaking Nabisco pinwheels, and watching snippets of my mother's chatter with her friends at our home in Cupertino, California. I soon discovered that my mother's set is rare. It's made of Bakelite and was produced in the early 1960s. A complete set, 152 tiles or more, goes for about $1,800, if you can find one. But these vintage sets are getting hard to track down because Mahjong has been experiencing a surprising spike in popularity as more people look for ways to connect with friends and as more women inherit their mom's old sets. Even celebrities like Julia Roberts and Sarah Jessica Parker play. Parker received a vintage set for her 52nd birthday and wrote on her Instagram account that it was one of the best birthday gifts she had ever received. "I'm lost in imagining the set's previous owner and all the games played in its long past." Mahjong originated in China long ago, but became a fad in the U.S. in the 1920s. The game was the center of many Jewish women's social lives in the early 20th century. Games were held in apartments late into the night, and sets were taken along for summer fun in the country. In a box of my mom's things, I found a red diary from the summer of 1950, when she learned the game at age 12. Interspersed with brief stories of squabbles among her friends, swimming at the Shawanga Lodge and fishing with her dad, there are almost daily notes of her passing time by playing Mahjong. "It is becoming a habit," she wrote. When the families came back to Brooklyn after Labor Day, my mom and her friend Annie taught their friend Sylvie how to play. During the next 7 decades of her life, Mom turned to Mahjong whenever she needed to find a group of friends, especially during life's transitions. "Grief is a mysterious and irrational state. Certain objects from my mom that I had long coveted became painful to have near me, while others, like her Mahjong set, hold comfort. It's as if the set offered a way to smooth the transition of losing her daily presence in my life. When I look at the intricate birds or dragons painted in green and red, I think of her kibitzing with friends, exchanging gossip in her thick Brooklyn accent. I can imagine her studying her tiles and concentrating on every discard, weighing the risks. But the game is about more than winning. It's about camaraderie. My mom was naturally shy, a person who liked to listen more than talk, a skill that served her well in her career as a school psychologist. The game gave her a way to belong to a group without sharing more of herself than she was comfortable doing. Mom knew I was introverted like her. The more I studied her old set, the more I wondered if she'd given it to me because she wanted me to find a group of women of my own. "You're not a joiner," Mom observed, when I struggled to find a group of friends after moving to New York City in my early 30s. "It would make things easier." She was probably right. My independent and competitive nature still gets in the way of my social life. But after my mom's death, I realized I needed more of a network. The person I had relied on for advice was gone. I knew, of course, that nothing could replace her, but I needed to try to fill in some of the gaps. I decided to learn Mahjong, and I discovered a thriving online community of learners. Through the Facebook group, Mahjong, That's It, which has 30,000 members, I found a class in my town of Santa Cruz, California. The class was taught by the effervescent Paula Suzuki, whose strategy for the game reminded me a bit of my mom's attitude in life. "Wait for jokers and kvetch a lot," Suzuki advised. Pre-pandemic, our little group of eight met twice a week for 2 weeks right before the class ended. We exchanged emails, and soon we had arranged to meet weekly at a restaurant that didn't mind us taking over a couple of tables. Two people owned sets and brought them. Someone else bought a felt cover to smooth out the sticky tables. One of the things I missed during the pandemic was the simplicity of gathering for our games. I played online every day, especially during the early lockdown, but it wasn't nearly as much fun. By May of this year, we had all been vaccinated, and our group made plans to meet at an outdoor table at our usual spot. It was one of the markers that the long year was finally coming to an end. I think about my mom a lot when I play. Through the gift of her set, she reminded me how healing it is to be welcomed into a group, even a ragtag group of Mahjong newbies. You don't have to share your secrets or your sorrows. You just have to show up. For me, game days are days of light, easy friendship, and acceptance. It's a feeling that lingers long after I step away from the table. The author of this piece is journalist Amy Ettinger. She's 47 and is the author of Sweet Spot, an ice cream binge across America. Now, while we're in AARP, the magazine, let's go on with when your body attacks itself. Our risk of these common disorders may be much higher than that of our parents, researchers say. What's going on? So we've been reading these articles, and we are now up to a race for the cure. Some autoimmune diseases progress slowly. Others advance more rapidly. The longer you wait to address the symptoms, the more underlying havoc they may cause. Research shows that people with inflammatory bowel disease are up to 5 times more likely than those without it to develop colon cancer. Likewise, among those with rheumatoid arthritis, the odds of heart disease are almost doubled. Yet finding a treatment that works or doesn't harm you outright can be a winding road. It's common that the first or second medication isn't really effective, says Reem Jan, an assistant professor of medicine and a rheumatologist at the University of Chicago Medicine. Medicines often include non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, such as ibuprofen, and immune system suppressants, such as steroids, disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, DMARDs, and biologics, a type of immunosuppressant made from natural compounds. These take an overly aggressive immune system and suppress it back to normality, explains Daniel Mueller, MD, a professor of medicine at the Center for Autoimmune Disease Research at the University of Minnesota Medical School. Despite the numerous medications available, steroids, for better or for worse, tend to be the go-to therapies for many of these diseases, says Mary K. Crow, MD, a professor of medicine and a senior scientist at the Hospital for Special Surgery and the Cornell Medical College in New York City. Even when patients are treated with biologics, many are often on steroids, but these drugs have terrible toxicities, including an increased risk of diabetes and infection. The treatment can sometimes be worse than the disease. Immunosuppressants also come with their own risks. They are designed to lower the body's defenses, and that can result in dangerous consequences. Indeed, after Glenn Frey's death, his manager suggested that it was the battery of drugs he was taking to treat his rheumatoid arthritis that had set the stage for his death. When Hedy Gubernaar was first treated for giant cell arteritis, her rheumatologist prescribed a steroid called prednisone. Unfortunately, the initial dose was far too high, creating unbearable side effects. "I was shaking all the time," Gubernaar recalls. "I lost the ability to sleep. I had no control over my hands, so I could no longer write. My face was misshapen. I didn't want anyone to see me." But if cases of autoimmune disease are proliferating, so too are novel treatments. New drugs are coming on the market at a tremendous pace. One autoimmune disease that targets the central nervous system, neuromyelitis, optica spectrum disorder, had zero approved treatments in 2019. But since then, three effective approaches have been developed. For lupus alone, a disease I specialize in, there are many drugs in clinical trials and more are getting approved, Crow says. Bone marrow transplants for MS and scleroderma, an overgrowth of collagen in the skin and other organs, are another recent breakthrough. The treatment works by rebooting the immune system to stop the inflammation. The current therapy, however, is less effective in older patients than in younger ones. The holy grail for doctors is developing the medications that can substitute for steroids, that can cool the immune response but don't have the same side effects, Crow adds. When a new autoimmune treatment gets the green light, physicians are frequently able to use it to address a variety of diseases that share similar immune pathways, creating a sort of virtuous circle. For example, the list of approved biologics is constantly growing. They can now be used to treat diseases ranging from arthritis to psoriasis to inflammatory bowel disease. Because there are so many new treatments popping up, locating the right doctor, one who is up to date on the latest research, can direct you to the most promising treatments or even to a clinical trial. This is crucial. Finding a balance. Like many people with autoimmune disease, internist Annie Brewster had to make a difficult choice about her treatment. Her physicians identified a drug that helped slow the progression of her MS. After that medication was linked to a deadly brain infection, however, she stopped taking it. "I had to balance out what was worthwhile. Would I rather risk being disabled or dead?" she says. Brewster found Health Story Collaborative, a group that promotes patient storytelling as a way to heal and help others. It was born of her own struggles to accept her autoimmune disease. "Initially, I was afraid that my MS would consume all of my identity," she reveals. "Now I find myself craving the stories of others with chronic illnesses. It has given me new strength and empathy to be a better person and a better doctor." Most autoimmune diseases are lifelong. Though many cases are mild and some symptoms come and go throughout life, others require nearly constant management. No matter where Brewster's illness takes her, learning about the redemption stories of other patients with illness has given her faith that she will be okay. They have taught me to let go of some of the fear associated with my illness. I have seen that no matter what, you can find a way to make a meaningful life. This article was by Jessica Migala, who has written for Marie Claire, Prevention, and more than 30 other magazines. Now, let's take a bit of a break and move on to Prevention magazine, Find Your Calm. And this program today is entitled, The Magic of Being Mindful Every Day. No matter where you are or what you're doing, these many meditations will help keep you calm and focused on the present moment. Many of us rush through our days on autopilot, going from one errand, family obligation, or social event to another. In fact, Harvard researchers have found that we spend up to 50% of our lives distracted by past or future concerns rather than in full awareness of our surroundings at any given moment. This frenetic activity taxes our brains and our bodies. One solution is to practice mindfulness, which, as you now know, is a form of meditation that requires you to simply pay attention. That's it. Unlike other meditative practices, in which you've encouraged to completely empty your mind of thoughts, mindfulness means being intentionally present in whatever you're doing, with an engaged curiosity of some kind, says psychotherapist Alicia Goldstein, the author of the book Uncovering Happiness, Overcoming Depression with Mindfulness and Self-Compassion. To be sure, mindfulness can be challenging. Most of us aren't accustomed to bringing our attention continually to the present moment. But research has shown that regularly practicing mindfulness, even if it's only for a few minutes at a time, can trigger changes in the brain that help reduce anxiety and depression, relieve stress, improve sleep, lower blood pressure, and ease pain. Ready to get started? We've collected 10 easy exercises to help you on your way to experiencing the rewards of a mindful life. Now, we're not going to do all 10 today. We'll sort of scatter them over the next few programs. 1. Waking up. Take a few moments before getting out of bed to decide on an intention for your day. Then, before you do anything else, sit up and focus on the rhythm of your breath for a moment or two. Then ask yourself this: what qualities would I like to cultivate today? Let whatever answers that come up wash over you like a wave, and keep returning to that question as your focus, says Lordro Rensler, a meditation teacher and co-founder of MNDFL Meditation Studios in New York City. If you find that one answer strikes you as particularly meaningful, commit yourself to doing your best to stick to that plan for the day. And 2, at work. The most basic mindfulness practice is to focus attention on your breath whenever you notice that your mind has wandered. You can apply this same principle to staying on task when you need to finish a project at work, says David Levy, a professor in the Information School at the University of Washington and author of Mindful Tech, How to Bring Balance to Our Digital Lives. When you sit down to work, set a clear intention for what you would like to accomplish. Whenever you feel yourself getting distracted, take a breath and bring your attention back to the task at hand. In line, 3. Instead of checking your email or browsing Facebook while you're in the checkout line at the supermarket, meditation teacher Sharon Salzberg recommends practicing a simple kind of loving-kindness meditation, a technique that focuses on generating warmth and compassion for others. As you are standing in line, notice the people around you and silently direct good wishes toward them. You might choose to address all of your thoughts to one specific person, or you may address many people, either at once or individually. Your good wishes can include things like, I hope you are happy, and I wish you good health. When you're finished, take stock of how you feel. Do you feel lighter or more joyful? Are you more aware of what's going on in your environment? And finally for today, mealtime. Becoming mindful of your breathing while waiting for dinner to boil or food to cook is a great way to squeeze a mini mindfulness meditation into your daily routine, says Kristen Race, PhD, creator of the Mindful Life program. Start by finding a place in the kitchen to stand or sit quietly. Focus on your breath as you inhale and exhale deeply. For 3 to 5 minutes, simply pay attention to your breathing, following the movement of the inhale and exhale. For those few moments, resist the urge to make a salad or set the table. If your mind wanders, return it to focusing on your breath. Later, when you sit down to your meal, savor it slowly, with all of your senses engaged. Notice how your food smells and tastes, what it looks like, and how it feels in your breath. More of this next time. Now let's look at our next step in the Complete Guide to Heart Health for people over 50. Women and heart disease. We may have different symptoms than men and receive less effective treatment too. Here's what you need to know to reduce your risk and get the care you deserve. After menopause, estrogen production and its heart protective effects decline. That's a bit of a sidebar article. There are chick flicks and chick lit, women's issues and women's rights. Clearly, there are major differences between the sexes. But when it comes to heart attacks, women also assume they'll have the same warning signs as men do and get diagnosed and treated as promptly and effectively. Unfortunately, that belief is not only false, it's deadly. The fact is, women's heart attacks often play out very differently than men's. The symptoms may not be the same, and sadly, women don't always receive the help they need in the ER or the doctor's office. A recent study published in the Journal of American Heart Association reported that women are up to 3 times more likely to die following a serious heart attack than men due to unequal care and treatment. Among the findings, females are 50% more likely to be misdiagnosed at first, 34% less likely to have procedures that clear blocked arteries, and 24% less likely to be prescribed medication to help prevent a second heart attack. What accounts for these stunning disparities? One of the study's authors suggests it's because heart attacks are seen as a male problem. More awareness of this issue is needed, and it can start right here. Learn the symptoms of a heart attack as well as the risk factors. Familiarize yourself with how to advocate within the medical system, too. You might save a loved one or a friend, or even yourself. Read the signs. Chest tightness or pressure is the most common heart attack symptom in both men and women, but oftentimes women don't experience the true Hollywood heart attack with chest pain, says Nisa Goldberg, MD, medical director of New York University Women's Heart Health Program in New York City, and author of The Women's Healthy Heart Program, Life-Saving Strategies for Preventing and Healing Heart Disease. What women might experience is a sudden onset of shortness of breath, where they feel exhausted as if they've run a marathon, but they haven't really done any activity, she explains. Women may also report tightness in their arms, jaw, neck, or upper back, rather than in the chest, she adds, and may feel like they're going to pass out. As for the classic chest tightness, Goldberg stresses it doesn't need to occur right in the center of the chest in either men or women. Oftentimes, we see women when it's in their lower chest, and they've easily mistaken it as a stomach ailment, she warns. In both sexes, nausea or vomiting can come along with a tight feeling. Ramped up risks. While men and women share many of the same risk factors for a heart attack, a lot of those traditional risk factors disproportionately affect women more than men. For example, a female who has a diagnosis of high blood pressure is less likely to be aggressively managed for that. Because of that, it can increase her risk of a cardiovascular event in the future. That's just the start of the inequities. We also know that a female who has a diagnosis of diabetes is about 7 times more likely to have a heart attack, whereas a man is about 2 to 3 times more likely. The same way, if a female smokes the same amount of cigarettes for the same duration as their male counterpart, they're at about a 25% higher risk of having a heart attack or stroke than their male counterpart. Last of all, the scales tip against women, literally. Those who are in the obese category have almost double the risk of a cardiovascular event as a man. In addition, women have more non-traditional risk factors than men. Certain conditions that can occur during pregnancy, namely gestational diabetes, gestational high blood pressure, preeclampsia, a complication involving high blood pressure, along with possible signs of damage to the liver, kidneys, or another organ system, and premature labor. All of these are risk factors for future cardiac events. We like to call pregnancy a window to our future health window. These conditions place the mother's body in a much more stressful state that makes her more vulnerable to underlying cardiovascular conditions in the future. It is very important for clinicians to make an extensive pregnancy history and actually ask if there are any adverse pregnancy outcomes or complications during the delivery, because that may actually completely change one's overall risk. Two other medical problems that are more common in women than men, lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, also raise the chances for heart disease. They are inflammatory conditions, and inflammation increases risk. In addition, women are more likely than men to suffer from stress, anxiety, and depression, which can tax the cardiovascular system and possibly lead to a heart attack. More on this in our next program. Now, one quick note from my friend in Canada. People who ask me what I'm doing tomorrow probably assume I even know what day of the week it is. Okay, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.